Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, this is Money Talking. I'm Charlie Herman. It is so early in the presidential race, you probably aren't even paying too much attention, or for that matter, even want to hear much about it. But already, analysts say there are as many as 19 declared or potential candidates in the Republican field alone, and only one of them is a woman. That is Carly Fiorina. She's the former CEO of HP. And next week, she's expected to announce that she is running and that she'd make a good president because of her business experience. But do CEOs make for good presidents, let alone politicians? Well, joining me are two business reporters, John Carney of The Wall Street Journal and Sheila Kolhatkar of Bloomberg Businessweek. And Sheila, why is Carly Fiorina running?
Carly Fiorina was a rock star of corporate America. So she was the CEO of Hewlett-Packard from 1999 to 2005. And during that time, she was a full-on business celebrity. Her face was on the cover of Fortune magazine. She was at the top of every sort of powerful woman in business list. And she came to be known just by her first name, Carly. Then everything fell apart. I mean, she took over this company that made printers. It was a pretty decent business. And she sort of forced this merger on the company that was very controversial. And she had a huge fight with her board of directors, and it got really ugly. And the share price started to go down. And ultimately, Hewlett-Packard fired her. So she left there in a real sort of state of shame and disgrace almost. And I think that she must have some burning desire to sort of rehabilitate her reputation and sort of alter what's going to be written about her in terms of her legacy.
John, do the skills of a successful CEO or one that's even had some difficulty, do those translate into doing a good job at running the country?
Well, typically, the real answer is we don't know. We don't really elect CEOs in this country to be our president. So if you were to look at take it as the judgment of the American people, you'd say generally we decide that those aren't the skills. But strangely enough, maybe some of what got Carly in trouble when she was in the CEO position could help her run. You know, after all, this fighting with the board, trying to make bold changes in the company, even if it didn't work out, those are things that might work out if you're president. If you're going to have to get your way through, you know, Congress and governors all over the country, maybe being a, you know, sort of very forceful person, the thing that got her in trouble in the corporate world, might help in politics.
But the odds seem to be so against her. There's one poll, I think, that finds that she's maybe at 2% of voters would choose her right now. Granted, of course, it is very early. So make the business case for me for why she is running. And not just her, so many of these candidates who are jumping into the race. Why are they doing this?
I think something happens to people when they achieve this really high level of success in the business world. I mean, they become incredibly wealthy. They, if they're running a company, and often, you know, running your own company, they get to make all of the decisions. They don't have to answer to constituents the way someone governing does. And I think it leads to a really inflated sense of their own abilities to some extent, and they start to sort of feel like they can do anything and that they know better. And I think a lot of people who started relatively modestly and sort of just through really hard work and ambition just sort of rose to this really high level in the business world, they have a real sense that they, you know, they've achieved this because they're really special, and voters don't seem to respond to that. They don't seem to find that appealing, that idea.
Well, maybe before we ask if a CEO makes a good president, we should ask ourselves what makes a good CEO. And it's interesting, this week we got a little bit of insight on this when the ex-wife of Elon Musk, he's the guy behind Tesla and one of the most successful entrepreneurs in the country, she went on this online forum where there was a question that was asked, how can I be as great as Bill Gates or Elon Musk? And obviously being his ex-wife, she had some insights. Sheila, when you saw her comments and you saw the way that she described a person who's a very successful CEO, does that sound like somebody who would make for a good president?
I was really riveted by what she had to say about him. I mean, she offered a perspective we don't get very often, which was like this unvarnished, intimate view of what a really high-level entrepreneur's personality is like. And one word she said over and over again in her comments was obsessive. She said, you have to be so focused, obsessive, obsessive, obsessive about your goal and your passion. And often that comes at a great cost. It comes at a cost in your personal life, and it also leads you to develop this sort of tunnel vision on this one thing that you're pursuing, and you don't have the time or the energy or the mental space to sort of look around and think about other people's problems because you're just so focused on your goal.
John, what stood out to you in those comments?
The profound unhappiness of Elon Musk and very likely a lot of very successful people. They have lots and lots of money. He's already been very successful. But it's very clear that there's something almost missing inside of them, and they are filling it up with money, but also with this drive to innovate or create the next best car. I think that nobody reading what Elon Musk's ex-wife said would think that that's the kind of person I want to be, or at least not a well-adjusted person. Maybe sometimes we look at things wrong when we sort of look at, with envy or jealousy at the financial success of people who have done very well. They might not be, actually, from what I can tell, at the very top, most of them are not as happy as people who have just had sort of an ordinary level of success.
It sounds like the Gloria Vanderbilt story, poor little rich girl.
It's hard to muster sympathy for billionaires, I realize, but at the very least, and so, perhaps that's not the answer here, but at the very least, maybe what we can say is just in our own lives, maybe we're doing better than we think we are because our success isn't judged in terms of money, but in happiness.
It definitely answered the question to some extent for me of why some of these people don't quit. They never stop. They don't retire. You see some of these business moguls just going on and on into their 80s. Like, they cannot just go to the golf course. And when you look at someone like Carly, she's achieved a lot in her life. She's obviously very wealthy. She could just enjoy her life with her husband, enjoy her grandkids. But instead, she is continuing to push on into what looks like an incredibly sort of difficult and painful political campaign. As I've discussed her with various colleagues, everyone says, why is she doing this? She obviously is not going to win. Perhaps she's trying to position herself as a vice presidential candidate. But there is this sort of fundamental unanswered question of why she just doesn't stop.
Well, Sheila Kohatkar with Bloomberg Businessweek and John Carney with The Wall Street Journal, thanks so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And I'm Charlie Herman, and this is Money Talking from WNYC.